Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to IDVAC Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by the Institute on Domestic Violence in the African American Community, in collaboration with the Women of Color Network and the African American Domestic Peace Project. IDVAC Blog Talk Radio is made possible by a grant from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Administration for Children and Families, Family and Youth Services Bureau, and Family Violence Prevention and Services Program. Now, points of view expressed in this program do not necessarily represent the official positions or policies of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. IDVAC Blog Talk Radio brings you rich conversations and education on issues surrounding domestic violence in African American and African communities.
Good evening, listeners. Welcome to the Women of Color Network Hour, where we will discuss specific topics related to gender-based violence and its impact on the African-American community. The Women of Color Network is a project of the National Resource Center on Domestic Violence and is dedicated to ending violence against women of color and their families by promoting the leadership of women of color advocates. If you are in immediate danger or feel unsafe in your home or relationship, call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233. Now, on to tonight's show.
Hello, and welcome to the National Women of Color Network Monthly Radio Blog Hour. We're committed to bringing you a range of diverse topics addressing domestic violence in the African-American community. The Women of Color Network, also known as WOCN, uses this technology to amplify our collective voices along with the Institute on Domestic Violence in the African-American community. We advocate for and educate about women who experience community and stranger violence, as well as violence in their intimate relationships, and hold abusers accountable. We use this radio blog show as a means to engage our guests and communities on important issues that we all should be talking about and taking action on wherever we are. My name is Sister Samaya Fire. I'm one of your hosts for this evening. I carry out many roles on this platform as WOCN's leadership director, as a national speaker and trainer on a variety of issues that impact the lives of women, children, and families, and also as an independent consultant and organizer on social justice and human rights issues. That's a little bit about me now, and I want to bring in my co-host and community sidekick, who is none other than the fabulous Miss Alice. Are you there?
I'm here, and I am delighted to be here with you tonight. We are going to have an interesting show tonight. I think it's a topic that we need to be talking about more often, and we have two wonderful people who will definitely teach us something. I am Alice Lynch, your co-host, and I also serve as the chairperson for the Women of Color Network, along with doing a lot of things here in my home state of Minnesota, being involved with a lot of different programs, including working on restorative justice as it makes a difference in the communities that we work in and live in. So we're going to move on with the show tonight and bring in Sister Shazmi Jackson, who's going to bring us up to speed about what we need to know about this issue. Go ahead, girlfriend.
Thank you, Miss Alice. Well, good evening, listeners. As Ms. Alice said, I am Shazmi Jackson, and I'm the program coordinator for the Women of Color Network, Inc. I will be framing tonight's topic by providing key statistics and sharing background information for the show. Tonight, we will be discussing the link between domestic violence and HIV in the African-American community. It is estimated that more than one-third of women in the U.S. have experienced violence at the hands of an intimate partner. Domestic violence has many negative emotional and physical consequences, including an increased risk of HIV infection. There is considerable evidence to support a linkage between gender-based violence and the risk of HIV infection. The risk can be direct through forced or coercive sex with an HIV partner, or indirect, such as violence or threats of violence, that limit the women or the girl's ability to negotiate safer sexual practices with their partner. Pre-adolescent and adolescent girls are at an increased risk of HIV infection due to the high incidences of coerced sex amongst this age group. The National Violence Against Women survey confirms that over 36% of women in the U.S. have experienced rape, physical violence, or stalking by an intimate partner in their lifetime. Of these women, 69% are 25 or younger, and 22% are between the ages of 11 and 17. Many other studies show that women who had abusive partners were 4 times more likely to be verbally abused and 9 times more likely to be threatened with physical violence when they asked their partner to use a condom compared to those who do not have an abusive partner. Sex can also be more frequent in violent relationships because men in violent relationships often feel they have the right to decide when sex should take place and that women have no right to refuse them. Furthermore, women who are victims of domestic violence often have a reduced sense of self-worth, which can in turn cause them to accept risky sexual practices. Every 35 minutes, a woman tests positive for HIV in this country. Yet the impact of HIV among Black women and girls is even more startling. Nationally, Black women account for 66% of new cases of HIV among women. HIV AIDS-related illness is now the leading cause of death among Black women ages 25 to 34. A number of challenges contribute to the epidemic among Black women and girls, including poverty, lack of access to health care, misinformation, lack of awareness, and stigma are just a few. Experts long believe the structural factors such as higher unemployment rates and mass incarceration for African Americans exert so much stress on people that it constrains their ability to engage in behaviors that will protect them from HIV. Additionally, limited economic security can increase the likelihood of African-American women and girls engaging in high-risk behaviors, such as prostitution or sex work. Many stay in high-risk violent relationships and situations just to help make ends meet, since leaving would mean that they would be left to struggle alone or to support themselves or their children. Additionally, a woman who depends on her partner economically cannot afford to jeopardize the relationship, even when she suspects he may be HIV positive or have multiple partners. Closely related to economic disadvantage is the fact that many African American women are marginalized and vulnerable to multiple traumatic experiences, including stereotypes of being portrayed as aggressive or masculine or dangerous, which may cause them to avoid seeking help out of fear that they'll be blamed or made to feel somehow deserving of their abuse. Although HIV AIDS infections among Black women is a complex mix of economic, social, cultural, biological, environmental, and behavioral factors, the harsh reality is that 1 in 30 Black women will be diagnosed with HIV at some point in her life. With Black women accounting for 9 out of 10 new HIV infections among women, it is important to acknowledge and understand how social and gender inequalities and cultural dynamics shape our perception and realities of this disease. We invite our listening audience to join the discussion and challenge each other to increase awareness to eliminate the stigma and stereotype about HIV AIDS, so we can begin effectively addressing the epidemic among Black women and girls. Now, back to our show with Allison Samaya.
Thank you for that information. I'm sure it's something that we all need to know, and hopefully somebody has learned something this evening. I'd like to start the show off by introducing our first presenter tonight. She came highly recommended by someone who I respect dearly. Her name is Shanasha Whitson, and I probably said your name wrong, and I apologize.
You said it correct.
Born and raised in Minnesota and knows all too well the effects of domestic violence. Shanasha has seeing firsthand as a licensed social worker, as a guardian ad litem, as a medical case manager, as a program manager and program coordinator, the impacts of violence has on women, children, and families. When Shanasha graduated from Metropolitan State University with her bachelor's degree in psychology and a minor in criminal justice, she worked in the public health field and noticed the influence violence has on women and children. When she returned to graduate school at Concordia University to obtain her master's degree in business communications, she realized now more than ever how important advocacy work for women is and training to providers in understanding the dynamics and social and ecological strains abuse puts on a community. Shanasha has worked with Hennepin County, the Minnesota Department of Health, the Minnesota Department of Human Services, the Minneapolis Urban League, Bracken Psychological Services, African American AIDS Task Force, and a host of public and private community health organizations through her work to help create health equity by providing training, education, and advocacy. Welcome to the show, Shanasha.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we also have tonight as one of our presenters, Ms. Kimberly Farrell, who came highly recommended by one of my sister friends in Virginia. I want to give a shout-out to Sister Sanu Bean. And Kimberly Farrell is currently employed as a community educator with Access AIDS Care in Norfolk, Virginia. She was appointed as a member of the Greater Hampton Roads HIV Health Services Planning Council and serves as the vice chair. She participates with the Community Access Committee to educate consumers about the medical and supportive services provided by the federal Ryan White program. Her personal experience with HIV has fueled a passion to reduce the stigma around HIV and AIDS and to stimulate open, honest, and accurate information regarding this medical condition. Welcome to our show tonight, Kimberly. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, and thank you as well for having me.
You are so welcome. We are just ready to jump right into this hot topic about HIV and AIDS and black women. I heard our sister Shazmay say that every 35 minutes a woman tests positive for HIV in this United States of America, and yet the impact of HIV among black women and girls is even more startling. Nationally, black women account for 66% of new cases of HIV among women, and HIV/AIDS-related illness is now the leading cause of death among black women ages 25 to 34. Now, that's something for us to start our hot topic conversation off with tonight. And so my first question for you, Ms. Farrell, is how does the stigma surrounding HIV/AIDS impact survivors of domestic violence who are diagnosed with HIV and AIDS?
I think what the stigma of HIV does is it makes it a very shameful medical condition. It's not seen as just another medical condition, but I think the stigma increases the fear. And fear is, I believe, one of the roots of domestic violence. So it can be used as a tool, you know, to keep the woman down, keep her subservient, keep her quiet. And so stigma has a big role to play in a lot of issues when it comes to HIV and AIDS. Mm.
Thank you. Ms. Allen?
Well, I was just wondering if Shanasha wanted to add anything to that.
So what happens in our community a lot of times is if you're not culturally competent and socially responsive to the issue, we forget the underlying factors that really cause the disease, which is trauma. A lot of women experience childhood trauma and young adult trauma, and so the issue of PTSD and childhood trauma increase the inability of women to make healthy sexual health decisions regarding their health and wellness. And so when we look at the impacts of HIV, we really have to look at the core of what the issue is, and that's trauma. Black women are less likely, again, as mentioned, to access mental health services because of the stigma. And so what that does is it further complicates all the other issues that we have to deal with, like finding a job, taking care of our children, and supporting our families when we don't deal with that core issue, which is trauma. And so that's why if you take any health disparity and put it up against African-American people, and then another sub-population, which is African-American women, you can times that by 2 or 5 and say we're 2 times more likely to have this issue or 5 times more likely to have the issue. And so that's why we're seeing a rise, actually, when we should be seeing a steady decline in the rate of transmission.
Mm. Okay. I think we got a good answer to that question.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about women and communities around HIV and AIDS. And so either one of you can answer this because it's just something I thought about in hearing the follow-up that Janasha just gave us. So when we talk about these issues in our communities, how educated do you think they are about the issue itself and even about domestic violence and how it all plays together?
So most recently, I was talking with Reverend Strait. He's a pastor at a Methodist church in Dalton, Illinois. And so the NAACP, in collaboration with Gilead, one of the really big innovators in HIV medication and treatment, came up with the Black Church, the HIV Social Justice Imperative Initiative. And so what we're finding out about HIV and AIDS education and STD prevention and awareness is because of the stigma, it's not a hot topic that we really engage in. And so a lot of clinicians, especially in the mental health field, don't really know how to engage the conversation about sexual health because of the stigma. Let me give you a little scenario. And so as a research pilot, I wanted to see how informative clinicians were. And you could think of any healthcare provider that you're a member of. And I went to 3 different healthcare providers. I'm not going to say their names. And wanted to engage the doctors in talking about PrEP. Well, if we don't know what PrEP is a medication that you can take so you don't contract or transmit the disease of HIV, which means if I take this pill once a day, the pill becomes 99.9% effective. If I take the pill for 3 weeks and then ongoing, there's a series of tests that I have to undergo to make sure that I'm okay to take the medication because, as we know or don't know, HIV medications are very, very strong. And so I went to these doctor's offices and said, hey, I think I'm at risk. I talked about my sexual behavior with the clinician and said, do you think I could, you know, figure out a way to take PrEP? All 3 of those clinicians weren't very well versed in PrEP. But when I said why I wanted to take it, well, I think I'm at risk for HIV. Oh, okay, you need to go see someone in disease management. And so we need to do all we can do in providing training and education to professionals. And back to the comment I was talking about when I was talking to Pastor Strait, there's an initiative, the Black Church HIV Social Justice Imperative Initiative, that trains pastors in dealing with advocating and providing education and awareness not only to their congregation, but also to, like, the deacons and other ministries. Because what we're seeing is, we know, especially for African-American people, black people, we go to the church. Wouldn't it be nice if one of the health disparities wasn't just diabetes, wasn't just heart disease, if something that we don't really talk about, but something that's greatly impacting our community, which is STDs and HIV, if we had a pastor who could provide training and education, or a ministry that could provide training and education. And so they created this wonderful curriculum to help provide that training and education. Because when you hear HIV and AIDS, it's not like saying, hey, I got diabetes. Oh, really? Yeah, my aunt got diabetes. She takes a shot. Or, yeah, the doctor gave us this booklet and we've been helping her work on our diet. Because of the stigma associated with HIV, we're not as quick to say, yeah, I'm positive too. You too, girl? Yeah, I found this really great program called the Well Project, which is another project for African-American women and other women of color and women who are HIV positive that culturally deals with the impacts of HIV specific to a community, like black women who, because of trauma, have a hard time negotiating sex, because of trauma, have a hard time accessing resources and things like condoms. And so education is greatly needed. And there are a host of educational initiatives out there that a lot of people can take advantage of, and I just named two of them. So we really need to do a better job, like we're doing tonight on the show. Yes. You know,
so, let me stop you right there, because you raised a really, really good point about the faith community. And also, too, about education. And it's not that we don't have vehicles or means to, you know, to educate. It is about the way in which we are using the vehicles and means that we have access to. So, you know, it's like you raised the issue of educating in the faith community. There are ways in which we could even utilize Preachers of L.A., Preachers of Atlanta. They could talk about the topic of HIV and AIDS and domestic violence. So there, you know, in our community, it is about how we choose to use the access that we have. So I want to bring that back around to you, Kimberly, to talk about the black community in the Hampton Roads area. That's in that down there near Hampton University. Is that all in the same area? And what are some of the statistics or the prevalence of HIV and AIDS in domestic violence in that community?
Okay, yes, it is the same area with Hampton, where Hampton University is located. Also, it's kind of a seven cities, and that includes Hampton as well as Norfolk. And Norfolk actually is number 5 in the United States in terms of the rates of sexually transmitted infections, which includes HIV. So number 5, the city of Norfolk, number 5 in the United States.
Wow.
That kind of gives you a perspective of the epidemic here in our Norfolk area. I wanted to touch on just a few things. One of the reasons that the rates of HIV infection are so high for African-American women is that the population that actually leads in new infections is 16 to 29-year-old African-American men who have sex with men. Now, that does include gay men. It includes bisexual men. But it also includes the heterosexual male who enjoys having sex with men but does not consider himself gay, homosexual, or bisexual. And so because of that population's rates of new infection, it's going to have a direct impact on African-American women, because these are our men, our lovers, our husbands, our boyfriends, whatever. So that's one of the reasons we see those spikes. And in terms of education, absolutely, it is so needed. And I think that is really the key to reducing the stigma. I share a lot of times with clients I work with one-on-one who've already been diagnosed that they have a responsibility as well, because as long as you're ashamed and you're afraid someone's going to find out, you keep the stigma going. And so we all have an opportunity as well as a responsibility to make sure that we educate our community. And I wholeheartedly agree that it should begin with the faith-based community.
Mm-hmm. And do you also, what are your thoughts about how we use the access that we have, but not using that in a way that we could do some creative educating around this issue? When you talk about HIV AIDS-related illness is now the leading cause of death among Black women ages 25 to 34, I mean, a lot of churches are just filled with Black women in this age group. And so, you know, you already have a ready-made audience there, and that would be a great opportunity, you know, from the pulpit as well as from some of the social media and the media shows, the more popular shows. I mean, in other words, I'm saying we have ways in which to educate. We just need to do a better job about educating, right?
Yes, we definitely need to do a better job. And I think with churches, I think the fear is that if we talk about HIV and AIDS, then we have to talk about everything that surrounds it, like sex and like homosexuality and those topics that are difficult for the church to speak about. But again, I agree with the guest who said that the church has always been that gathering place, and it's been the problem solver for the community. And so it's important that we step up in this area. But again, the stigma keeps everything silent, so I don't think people are even aware of, I won't call it an epidemic because it's not, you know, specifically classified as an epidemic, but I don't think people know that HIV and AIDS, that people are still being diagnosed every day.
Okay. And that's that educational piece, I think, again, that we can expand upon in helping people understand that HIV and AIDS is still real. You know, 15, 20 years ago, we seen advertisements on TV, and I think there were television shows of sick people and dying people, and it was a white gay disease. And so the Black community really didn't pay attention to HIV and AIDS, because most of the pictures we seen and commercials we seen were people in Africa who were sick, or white gay men in America. Slowly but surely, like every other health disparity that impacts our community, we started to see this stronghold of HIV on our community, holding our community captive. And so again, you know, we do this secret thing about being sick, not wanting to tell people or ask for help. And then shame plays a huge role in not even going to want to talk to your pastor. Say, hey, pastor, you know, I was just diagnosed with HIV. You know, what are my supports? Who can help me? It really created a barrier to a lot of people, especially like our other guest said, when you talk about HIV and being gay, being Black, and being a man, oh, I'm really less likely to come to church and access care support, because the stigma is very, very high. And so we have to do a better job at expanding that information. And I know if the churches really came out and supported the efforts of using condoms and getting tested and practicing safe sex, they do those couples counseling, you know, before you're going to get married. They say, come on in and do the how to be a successful married couple. They could do a ministry. Come on in and learn how to, you know, take care of your sexual health, how to use condoms, how to get tested, or how to...
Janasha, I'm going to take... This is a good place to take a break. We need to take a break right now, and when we come back, we can pick up right at that point about how we can get
the church and the community more actively involved in putting the word out. I wish you could see me sitting here while the two of you were talking. I'm just sitting here nodding my head, you know, like y'all can see me agreeing with you. So when we come back, this will also be a chance for our listening audience to call in. And so if you're interested, you can call 1-347-327-9611 and give us some comments or ask some questions. So we're going to take a break, and we'll be back in a bit.
To Sister Tanya Lovelace and the staff and advisors of the Women of Color Network, on behalf of Tony Porter, Bishop Freeze, and a call to men, all the men here want to say thank you. We want to recognize and thank you for the hard work and efforts to address and challenge the rights of women of color in the movement today. We just want to let y'all know, we ain't got nothing but love for you. Out to all the women of color, from a call to being gay to well-meaning brothers, cause we appreciate the hard work that you do. With all due respect, we just wanna say thank you for challenging us all to be better people. Like Dr. King said, we all created equal, staying on the front lines of the struggle, always do the rescue for women in trouble, for crimes like sexual assault and DVs, eliminating violence on women and family, addressing human trafficking and police brutality right here in the United States, and that's reality. Well done, sister's job well done, for the call to action for each one, teach one. So from a call to men and all his well-meaning brothers, sisters, we ain't got nothing but love for.
We got nothing but love for you. Oh, we're back. Oh, Miss Allen. Okay.
All right. Okay, we're back on the air.
Okay.
This is the time that if you want to call in, please do so. And that number is 1-347-327-9611. So let's get back to the conversation. We were talking about how the church can play a bigger and more active role in addressing this issue in our communities. So what can we do to pull them in?
I think it does relate to education as well, just getting out and letting the pastors and leaders know what's going on in our community. But I think we all know how difficult it can be to get into the black church, to get to the pastor or to find out who's the right person. So there, even those types of barriers with even getting in the door to talk to someone. So there are several agencies in the Norfolk area in Hampton Roads, and each one is doing their part to try to pull in the black church specifically, since we're talking about the black community. But again, if they do, the church has to be willing to step out as well. And so I think that that's important. But even just these two topics separately, HIV as well as domestic violence, are very hush-hush topics in our community. Almost, it's somewhat allowed, and sometimes women are taught that it's okay to be in that situation. So we have a lot of work to do, and so I think it's unfair to focus on one particular group. I think we all need to collectively look at how we can come together to educate our communities, educate those leaders and those entities that will take the lead to do more work in the community and more on an individual basis. But I'm not sure what the key is yet. I've myself tried very hard to get into the black church to do HIV education, and it's been difficult.
And so the initiative that I was talking about between the NAACP and Gilead, that's exactly what they do. they bring together pastors and deacons and offer them an opportunity to get educated about HIV and AIDS. And so, of course, whenever that happens, like you said, issues of, you know, men that have sex with men come up. Domestic violence, trauma, as I mentioned before, are huge factors. And so the churches are have an opportunity at that time. They know their congregations, and so they know how they can work with their congregations. And I agree with Kimberly. There are a host of community agencies, community-based organizations that are doing the job that they need to do. But one of the things I would like to see happen is a more open community dialogues about HIV and AIDS. And so what that would look like is like a town hall meeting to get everybody from the community to come out and maybe ask questions about the services that are available, like PrEP. A lot of people have never heard of PrEP. They don't know what PrEP is. And the song that we were listening to while we were waiting talked about sex trafficking. We have a huge sex trafficking epidemic, I'm going to call it, in America now. And a lot of women who don't have control over their lives, don't have the ability or the skill to negotiate sex, could really benefit from a pill like PrEP. These women, you know, aren't asked, you know, being asked what they want to do with their lives. They're being controlled by these sex trafficking rings. And so how do I protect myself as a woman in that situation, opposed to a woman who could probably access services? These women don't really have access to support. PrEP would be a wonderful way for them to engage in that little piece of safety that they might be able to accomplish. And so I think one of the many strategies we could think of, I'd like to see some town hall meetings going on where people really get to come out and ask questions and get the facts about HIV. You can't get it from mosquitoes. You can't get it from restrooms. You can't get it from sharing a spoon or a fork, because like Kimberly said, when she's working with people, a lot of the people that I work with or a lot of the people that I provide training to, those are still some of the information that they've received about the disease. And it's not true. You can't get HIV and AIDS that way. So I would like to see some town hall meetings educating the people, the masses, so people could really get a grasp of what the disease is and how to stop it.
Right, and as was mentioned in my bio, I serve as the vice chair for the Greater Hampton Roads HIV Health Services Planning Council. That's a mouthful. But we are the body that's responsible for managing the Ryan White funding that we get from the federal government. One of our challenges is the money chases the epidemic. So, again,
yeah,
the focus now are the African-American men who have sex with men. That's going to push women and black women down a little bit further in the priority. So, again, it's important for us all to come together to find out how we can do our part. What population could we reach the best? Absolutely, the churches will have to be creative and just provide it as some type of support groups. Or, and like our other guest mentioned as well, and I'm sorry, I don't want to chop your name up, but I really don't want to do that. Now I've forgotten my point, but it's important for the churches to be creative in how to reach out to those groups of people and make sure, because most important is about education. I was going to bring up the trauma. There needs to be support groups. Sexual abuse, incest, molestation has been huge in the black community. Again,
yeah,
a very taboo, hush-hush subject. But when our daughters and our sons are now going into addiction because of the trauma they've had from childhood, that can be a road to an HIV infection because of the risky sexual behaviors. And so it's so much, like I said, it's so much that we have, that we need to do in the Black community. There is so much work to do. And it's not all going to be done by the government. It's not going to be all done by the church. But we have to find a way to come together so that we can really address this topic.
Thank you so much, both of y'all, for those comments. One of the other things that Sister Shazmi spoke about was the strain. She talked about African Americans exert so much stress on people. Experts long believe that structural factors such as higher unemployment rates, mass incarceration rates, African Americans exert so much stress on people that it constrains their ability to engage in behaviors that will protect them from HIV, such as education. So, you know, we somehow the conversation flowed to education in the African American church, you know. So, and we know that that is a very strong part of our culture. But university is also a strong part of our culture as well. So what are universities doing to educate our communities about domestic violence and HIV/AIDS as well?
And so it's an interesting thing that you brought up. I just completed a six-month pilot project here in Minnesota with the University of Minnesota, Duluth, working with Dr. Olehi Okoro. She has a PhD in pharmacology, and one of the things we did with the pilot was we went around and talked with 30 providers that work directly with people who are infected with HIV and AIDS. And so we weren't shocked that we found this information out, but it just reaffirmed where we need to put our focus, which is in education, awareness, condom use, and practice of condom use in education. And what we found out was that a lot of people don't acknowledge they're at risk, number one. And that's because we haven't been educated into the ways in which we can transmit HIV. The other thing we found was that a lot of people want to access it, but because of all these other factors, like I mentioned, the ecological factors that disable us from taking time out for our health and wellness don't allow us to do that. So HIV is down on the back burner. I got to worry about how I'm going pick the baby up from daycare, go get grandma's medicine, bring my husband his lunch at work if he has a job, or I got to go visit him if he's incarcerated. How am I going to pay the rent or the mortgage and keep the lights on and have gas for next week after buying the medicine to get to work next week? And so I don't really have a lot of opportunity to say, okay, now I need to think about using a condom or getting tested for HIV. And so what are some of the ways in which agencies who offer sexual health education can also include some of those other services that need to be attached, looking at a holistic way to help people with sexual health? And then two, like Kimberly mentioned, now let's tack on incest, abuse, and trauma into that equation. There has to be a whole entire program that's developed to, you know, formulate it into helping us talk about that alongside HIV prevention. And it can be done, but it has to be an outcome-based program that says, okay, we know you're dealing with trauma, we know you're looking for a job, and we know you need housing. here's what we can do. And how, what does that look like?
That looks beautiful. That would be a beautiful picture of collaboration. I am a huge opponent of proponent for collaboration, yet it's so lacking in our community,
yeah,
even amongst our churches. If churches, if four or five churches, one that was a larger church and had a larger budget, then one who had a real heart for the community, for outreach, maybe another that loved children, even our churches could find ways to collaborate and do so much more with people than we do. And I understand the grants and the government, but I just sometimes it really bothers me that our churches want to kind of, I guess for lack of a better word, hook up with the government supposedly to help people, when the government is really going to limit what the church can do and what they can say. It's going to challenge them not to portray their beliefs and what they believe the answer is, or the way the client, the person should go about getting their healing or deliverance, however you want to put it. But it's so important that the churches just really stand on their principles, the most important principle being love. We have no right to judge anyone or point fingers or put on anyone down. We only have the responsibility to love. And I think that's what the church needs to realize. We're not asking you to do anything outside of your purpose. We just want some people to come to you that they can feel love. When people feel loved, they will open up. They will begin to talk to you. And then they can usher in some healing for themselves in regards to the trauma. But collaboration is so powerful and it's so needed. The faith-based community needs to be able and willing to bring what they bring, that valuable thing they bring to the table, to work with maybe a community-based organization that does free testing or is a provider of Ryan White services that makes sure people can get their lab work and see their doctors and get their medication. And so that what you mentioned earlier would be, it's beautiful if we can put it in action.
And so if we could, alongside that, look at HIV to one of the approaches to engaging people is if we started talking about HIV as a social justice issue. And I think a lot of times the health piece scares people away because they think if I don't get tested, then I don't have it. If I don't go to the doctor and if they don't tell me I'm positive, then maybe I won't get sick or I won't, you know, develop symptoms. And so they use it as a way to not acknowledge the issue. But I think if we started to look at HIV as a social justice issue, a health equity issue, we could engage the church and the community a little bit better, because I think what's happened, and Reverend Strait was saying that, you know, there is a group of churches in the country that have begun to do the work. But of course, when it comes to LGBTQ issues, you know, because of those firm beliefs that you mentioned, Kimberly, the church kind of doesn't know how to maneuver around it. And if we did just have love, we could serve everybody. But I think if we started to look at HIV as a social justice issue, we could look at the impacts that health has on a community. If I'm sick, I can't go to the doctor. If I'm sick, I can't keep a job. And so if I had my wand, I would wave it and make everything better for our community. Because sometimes...
Sister Shanasha, I mean, I agree with you on the social justice issue, the health equity issue. What about looking at it as a faith issue? We're talking about community of faith. We're talking about what people believe. We're talking about an issue of sickness, of disease, a medical condition. Where is the issue of faith on deliverance from that, as well as an issue of faith when it comes to the domestic and sexual violence and HIV and AIDS? So, you know, I think what we, you know, we're about to tie this conversation up. We're about to wrap it up. This is such a huge, hot topic.
It is.
We really don't have a lot of time to really just, you know, get into it and dig it all into little pieces and parts and talk about it in all the ways that we can. But I do see this as a faith issue. When you're talking about a community of faith standing with women, black women, where HIV/AIDS is the leading cause of death, how do we apply our faith in that situation? So, you know, I see what you're saying on the, you know, about the government and faith, the government and collaborating and all of that, but communities of faith have missed the great opportunity of dealing with these issues as an issue of faith. And how do women apply their faith and build their faith and live out their faith when they are living in these kind of conditions? So, you know, I'm going to have to turn it back over to Ms. Alice, because Ms. Alice knows I'm getting ready to get on the road.
This always happens. We get to the end of the show, and then it
always.
You ladies are dynamite. You did exactly what we needed to have happen tonight, but we've got to come to an end. And so I'm going to give each one of you an opportunity to take a minute and make a closing statement, something that you think you want our listening audience to know. So why don't we go ahead and start with you, Shanasha.
You know, I think I want to tell our community, especially our African-American women, our black women, is get tested, get educated, and access mental health services. I think that's key, because there are a lot of issues like Kimberly and we all talked about that impact our health and wellness, and one of those greatest impacts is trauma. And if we don't address our mental health issues, we can't even begin to work through all the other holistic issues that we have. So get educated, get tested, and access mental health services, because that's key to you know, women, especially experiencing intimate partner violence and domestic violence.
Well, thank you. And what about you, Kimberly? Any last words you want to put out there to folks?
Sure, I agree. It's important for everyone to get tested. But ultimately, I think it's important that we state that it is everyone's personal responsibility to educate themselves on how to keep themselves healthy, safe, whatever we're talking about. So I just encourage to educate themselves, get involved, and let's talk. Let's just try to start this conversation. It may not have caught on yet, but I believe that there may be something that's coming that's going to really make the importance of it known. And so I'm hoping that we will just continue to be consistent in reaching our community.
Thank you. And Samai, you got any closing words?
I do have closing words, closing thoughts, and I'm going to stick with where I left off about the issue of faith. Yeah, applying our faith to this situation, I'm going to stick right with the church. While we are singing, I love God. You don't love God? What's wrong with you? While we're singing that we also are walking with people who are in these situations, who are living with HIV and AIDS, that we apply the scripture in Matthew chapter 10 that talks about as you go preaching and talking about the kingdom of heaven is at hand, that we're also healing, that we're also walking with people through their situations. that HIV and AIDS is a real issue still in 2016. And just like people are living with HIV and AIDS in silence, people are living with violence in their home in silence. And that we should be speaking to those issues and helping folks to live and to be alive in those pews, not just sitting on those pews and hearing something over and over again, and that they are not teaching how to apply those principles and the words to their lives. And that for me is the real deal, because we can do all the talking and all the singing and all the dancing we want to do, and all of that is good. Every last bit of it is good. But we are missing the greatest opportunity to live out faith with people who really, really need somebody to be with them in their hurt, in their pain, in their sickness, in their illness, whether that's mental, physical, or whatever, and whether that's living with violence. We need to be more active around living out our faith rather than just talking about it. So that's what I want to leave with the community.
Eloquently.
Thank you, Preacher Samaya.
You're welcome.
Amen. Amen.
I'd like to thank both of our guests, Kimberly Sparrow from Norfolk, Virginia, and Shanasha Whitson from Minneapolis, Minnesota. And I have to give a special shout out to Roy Nelson from the Minnesota Department of Health.
Woo, go Roy!
He gave me the information and said, get her, get her. So I have to let him know how much I appreciate it. All I can say is you ladies were on fire.
Hey,
didn't get it, I don't know why. Mm-hmm. So you really put the information out there, and we appreciate you just being open and honest and so supportive of us to be here with us tonight. So as we close the show, again, it always gets good at the end, and it's always hard to stop something when it's going so well. But we are on a time frame. So as we close tonight, I want to thank you all. I want to thank our listening audience. I want to thank Tanya and Shazmi for being here with us and helping us get through the show. And I just want to leave you with this one thought. Love doesn't make the world go round. However, it makes the trip worthwhile. Thank you all, and I love you all. Good night.
Thank you so much.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to the Women of Color Network Hour. We hope that you enjoyed the show and found the topic and information useful. If you have any questions about the content of tonight's show or want to learn more about the Women of Color Network, please visit our website at womenofcolornetwork.org. If you are in immediate danger or feel unsafe in your home or relationship, call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233.
Well, that's it for today's show. You've been listening to IDVAC Blog Talk Radio, right here every week at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. IDVAC Blog Talk Radio is brought to you by the Institute on Domestic Violence in the African American Community, in collaboration with the Women of Color Network and the African American Domestic Peace Project. Visit us on the web at idvac.org to find out more information about our guests and presenters and to download podcasts of previous shows of IDVAC Blog Talk Radio. Until next week, be safe.